This is Press Play. I'm Madeline Brand.
It's been 7 hours and 15 days since you took your love away.
The song Nothing Compares to You, sung by Irish singer-songwriter Sinead O'Connor. It was the number one song in the United States back in 1990. With her shaved head, her yearning eyes, and magical voice, Sinead O'Connor captivated the world. But just 2 years later, in 1992, she went from world-famous pop star to pariah after she criticized the Catholic Church on Saturday Night Live.
In the victory of good over evil. Fight the real enemy.
She's tearing up a photo of Pope John Paul II there. She was protesting child abuse in the church and the secrecy around it. She was really ahead of her times, but at the time, she was effectively blackballed, and as quickly as she became a star, she fell. Now, Sinead O'Connor tells her own story in a new Showtime documentary. It's called Nothing Compares, and the director, Catherine Ferguson, joins me now. Welcome to Press Play.
Hello, Madeline. Lovely to be here.
Glad to have you. Well, so she was only 26 years old at that time.
She was.
And she had just become a star just a few years before. And describe her rocket to stardom. How did she become such a worldwide star so quickly?
Yeah, well, really, she came over to London in 1985 when she was 18. And she was brought over by a record label who gave her a year to kind of rehearse with the band and really develop her first album, which became The Lion and the Cobra. And The Lion and the Cobra became this huge success, both in the UK and in America. And I think it was really off the back of that that everything started to just dramatically build for her in terms of her success. It was really her track Mandinka that seemed to push her career forwards. Yeah, it all just happened extremely fast. I think what was fascinating about Sinead is that she was just very singular, and there's nothing that anyone could really do. There's nobody that they could compare her to, and people were as in awe of her as they were concerned about her. And, you know, she just seemed to be hugely topical for lots of reasons, good and bad. So I think all of that really led to this fame that she suddenly finds herself having by the age of 21.
Really incredible. I want to play more of her music now. And this is from her 1987 song, Troy. And it's from that debut album, The Lion and the Cobra.
We're sitting in the long grass in summer, keeping warm, all the memory, every restless night. We were so young then, we thought that everything we could possibly do was right. And we moved, stolen from our very eyes. And I wondered where you went to. And tell me, when did the light die? You will rise.
So that's a really beautiful, haunting melody, and her voice is just gorgeous. But she's singing about some pretty horrific things. Unless you know what her history is, you might not get it. So can you talk about what she's singing about there?
Troy was written when she was a teenager. And actually what she's talking about is the abuse she suffered at the hands of her own mother, and who she said that she would have locked her out in the garden, and or she would have turned the lights off in the house and left her out in the garden as punishment whenever she was a teenager. And the song is very much about this awful episode in Sinead's teenage life. Many people think it's about a man, but it's always, you know, it's about her mother, as a lot of I think a lot of Sinead's songs actually are from that era. You know, she goes on to talk even about her singing of Nothing Compares to You, the tear that she cries most famously in that video is when she thinks about her mother again. So I suppose so much of our film is trying to track that relationship, because so much of the relationship she had with her mother is then what plays out whenever she's, you know, at the peak of her fame.
So her mom, she says in the movie that her mom was physically, emotionally, mentally, spiritually abusive. And it was a horrific childhood. And it made her also act out. And then I guess her family didn't know what to do with her, so they sent her away to one of these institutions called the Magdalene Laundries. And this is something that's hundreds of years old, and it's where so-called fallen women were sent to these laundries, which were actually laundries, I guess, run by nuns. But they were to hide young women who had been maybe impregnated or abused in some way. And Sinead was sent to one of these places. Why was she sent there?
Well, she wasn't actually sent to a laundry. She was sent to a reform school that was attached to a historic laundry. Mm-hmm. So by the time she got there in the 80s, it was a school for girls, really, who, you know, had been sent maybe for behavioural problems. She had been sent there because she obviously was deemed to have behavioural problems because of the, you know, the traumatic childhood that she'd suffered. There was a music teacher, Jeanette Byrne, who worked with the girls doing music classes, who witnessed this incredible talent, and they really encouraged her to sing and to find her voice and to write songs. And I think whilst going to this place was obviously quite distressing, and being anywhere close to the laundry side of things was hugely distressing, I think it was a bit of a double-edged sword of an experience, because if she hadn't have ended up there, she may not have gone on the journey that she then did.
Yeah, exactly. And she wouldn't have had so much material, I suppose, to yes. write about and sing about so beautifully. She also was political in other arenas, and you have a clip of her at an awards ceremony. I think it was the Grammys. I'm not sure which year exactly, mm-hmm. but she has put into her shaved head, she's drawn the logo for Public Enemy. And because yes. Public Enemy had boycotted the Grammys that year mm-hmm. because they didn't have a best, I guess they didn't have a hip hop or rap category at the time.
Yes, yes.
And so there she was with this logo in her head, shaved into her head or drawn into her shaved head. And she really took up the fight for Black rights. In fact, when we were talking earlier and playing that clip about her tearing up the photo of Pope John Paul II, she was actually talking about the lack of rights, equal rights for Black people. So can you talk about that side of her? Because I don't think a lot of people are aware that she was actually fighting for racial justice as well.
Absolutely. I mean, I just think Sinead, in every aspect of how she used her voice and her platform, was always to speak out for underrepresented communities. And it was something that she felt strongly about from the very get-go. We have reports from speaking to people that went to school with her, or teachers who said that literally, even as a teenager, she'd be the person, you know, speaking out about injustices. And it was just something very innately in her, particularly when she moved away from Ireland and could see the much larger injustices in the world. She certainly took it upon herself to use her privilege and her platform to try and raise awareness. And it was so fabulous talking to Chuck D about that and about that particular performance.
I thought it was like admirable when she put the Public Enemy logo in her head. With Sinead O'Connor, you didn't get the sense that she was just being pretentious or she was fake. It was like, yeah, she seriously has issues with this. This is what's going to drive her artistry. She's committed to that.
But she's also wearing her baby Jake's baby girl tied around her waist, which is also a bit of a FU to her, to the record label that had previously told her that she should probably abort the child that she's carrying. So Sinead, at that very early stage, is using the aesthetics of protest in a very unusual way, probably not very often seen before, you know, for like, I think she was 21 at the time. You know, it wasn't some sort of novelty or pseudo protesting in any way. This was somebody who was actually using their own body to actually speak out from the very, very get-go.
Yeah, and also I don't think a lot of people knew that she had gotten pregnant so young, and the record company wanted her to abort the baby.
Yep.
And this was when she was making The Lion and the Cobra, and she said no, she wanted to keep the baby. And so the picture of her on the cover of that album is just her face, because they didn't want to show her pregnant.
No, absolutely.
So what happened after she, well, after that infamous incident on Saturday Night Live, what happened to her career in the years after that?
Well, I just think she suffered like this shocking backlash, the level of vitriol and hate towards this young 25-year-old from Dublin. It doesn't really make a lot of sense why she's causing that much fury. There's men in Times Square with steamrollers steamrolling over her records. There's horrendous commentary from very well-known people who I won't name, but certainly what then happened, I'd say, is probably one of the earliest mass cancelling of a superstar, probably one of the very first, before people had the chance to stick up for themselves and platforms like social media. She vanishes from being a superstar, and she was a superstar at that point. She pretty much vanishes in a commercial sense.
Yeah.
She, of course, went on to create another 7 critically acclaimed albums and has toured the world extensively, but she's never had that same level of commercial success. But by the sounds of it, and what is she, how she ends the film, again, very articulately, is that she didn't want any of that anyway. So,
But does she regret at all that moment, tearing up that photo, or no?
Not in the slightest, no. Not in the slightest.
Does she seem, in fact, the opposite, that vindicated, because so much of what she had to say actually has become accepted?
Absolutely. I mean, it was quite soon after, a couple of years after, where everything really started to come to light with regards to the issue of the Catholic Church. So absolutely. But she really suffered a huge amount for speaking out about it. She really, really did. And it was just, it's just a very tragic thing, I think, for anybody to go through, to kind of, you know, to have the platform that she did have, and, you know, this huge love around the world and this massive success, and to choose to use that to speak out against the injustices that really matter to her. But for then, for her voice and what she had to say to be so reduced and mocked, and for her to be written off as somebody not to listen to about anything, was incredibly cruel.
Hmm. It's really remarkable that it was just 6 years. Your film focuses on those years, 1987 to 1993. And that was just 6 years of a very long life, and yet so momentous.
I know. And as we've said the whole time, I mean, really, there could be 10 documentaries made about Sinead O'Connor. She's had such a unbelievably dense, colourful, incredible life in many ways. But, you know, for us, it was always very important that we could delve into this era so that we could go into the detail and particularly look way back and look at the cause and effect of why she did what she did in 1993. Really, that's what our film is about, is trying to like go back to the Ireland that spawned her so that you understand what she did in 1993. Because if you understand that, then everything since makes a lot more sense.
Catherine Ferguson, director of the documentary on Sinead O'Connor called Nothing Compares, and you can see it now on Showtime. Catherine, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
And that'll do it for us today on Press Play. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Madeline Brand. I'll see you tomorrow.